Hey, shh. We gotta record an Operation Recall podcast. I have to take control of your own podcast. Shh, I wanna do the intro.
This is the order of battle!
Shh, we need quiet on the set.
This is an Operation Recall concept creator interview.
Welcome to the Order of Battle with Chris Scott and Jason and John Russell from Chicken Fried Toys.
Don't name draw me.
He's on the fucking podcast.
So let's go ahead and get right into it.
Let's get into the Operation Recall. Yes.
Yeah, actually, I want to talk about something else today.
All right.
And if you're listening to this podcast at work, please go ahead and turn the volume down now.
Dim the volume. You didn't want to see it.
It's that same phenomenon of when you're driving a car looking for a location and you turn down the radio so you can see better.
Hey, stop talking to me. I'm looking where we're going.
Where are we going?
We are going to Operation Town.
Talk to me about some Operation Recall, my friend.
So what would you like to say about your concept? Because it's a pretty great concept.
It's self-deprecation. I don't actually think it's a great idea. It's just something I really wanted to do. Not because I think it's funny, but it was about my dog, Ozzy. It's about my dog, Oswald.
Nothing wrong with that.
As a child growing up, we kept pets. And then as a young adult, my parents decided that we didn't need pets anymore. We moved out in the country and the dogs went to live on a farm upstate somewhere, if you know what I'm talking about.
That's sad, man.
My best friend's wife decided after I ran through a particularly challenging period of time that I needed a dog to take care of, even though I was in no position to take care of myself.
But sometimes that works.
Well, it worked well enough. So she brings home a dog from the shelter who had been adopted out as a puppy. The family kept him for 6 months and by all indications beat him. They couldn't figure out how to make him behave and brought him back to the shelter. So that was the dog I got. She brought him home because he was only a couple of days from being on the euthanasia list. That's how Oswald and I got together. He was my buddy for 17 years. He was a weird dog, didn't know how to play, barely learned the command sit, never learned how to stay, always pulled on his leash like nearly to choking himself, never learned otherwise. And when I finally did try to teach him some tricks like how to roll over and stuff, he thought he was being murdered. That's the dog that you see in the image that we put together. And when Oswald got old enough that he had to be put down for his discomforts and dementia, I was feeling pretty low about it. So I pledged to my buddy Bill Murphy's Eagle Force Handbook and created a character to go along with Oswald and to make the character more like me. It's an old fat guy.
I love the character. Seriously. Like, I love Night Rage.
Well, Carson said that it resonated with him and some of the guys. And the thing is why I got picked, because you'll see in the military community a lot guys that are well past their prime. And they just continue to do it because it's what they know. That's kind of the story I wanted to build with this guy. He was a Ukrainian national, served in the Russian military, was explosives and heavy weapons expert. So, you know, heavy machine guns and. So Warsaw Pact stuff, not NATO. Given that, I was looking at character names, and my best friend, the same guy whose wife brought me Oswald to begin with, I used to use Alec Trevelyan 006 as an email address because I was a big GoldenEye Bond fan. And he was taking his second year of Russian at UTA, Arlington. And he said, you know what? I'm tired of typing out your long-ass email address, so I'm just going to name you Alyosha, which is the Russian diminutive familiar for Alex or Alexander. That's where Alyosha comes from. So that was where the concept of the character came from. Hit and Run is my favorite G.I. Joe, 1988. I'm very vocal about that. Yeah, great character. And a list popped up about 15 years ago on the internet that was circulating of code names that were proposed for characters and rejected at certain points during the creation of the vintage Real American Hero line. And Night Raid was one of Hit and Run's code names. And I thought it was very appropriate.
Yeah.
So I added it to that character. Built it out a little bit, added some elements I liked, and that's why you got a partner for Oswald, who's obviously the feature creature of the team. He's the focus. It's a little anecdote from my time at JoeCon. It's the same thing we talked about earlier. If y'all are G.I. Joe fans, you know the storied history of the concept cases. This started in 2010 with a panel that they put on Sunday afternoon discussing product that was never going to see the light of day because it was canceled or, you know, shelved for different reasons or what have you. At 2011 in New Orleans, they brought out what they called the concept case, which was tons and tons of paint masters of lines that were canceled, sublines that were canceled, concepts that weren't going to go any further, Renegades vehicles, which everybody was in love for.
There's some cool stuff out there.
Super cool stuff. The Howler Jet from the first movie that got canceled, you know. Anyway, John Warden was kind of the lead guy on the team at the time. I believe Eric Arana, now Boss Fight, and Andrew Franks were there as well. Of course, Daryl DePriest was there and a few other Hasbro people that I didn't know. But John was putting figures out, and I saw there was a hit and run in there, which is a design that the club kind of borrowed for their version somewhat. And that figure was in the case. I loved it. Hit and run modern version. Great figure. Great. Superior to the Cobra Island version by miles.
Oh, yeah.
So John and I got to talking about the thing over the course of the weekend. And I kept telling him I was going to smash the glass and steal the proto. But he said, you know what? Come back on Sunday and we'll talk a little bit more about the figure. I'll show it as we're taking out the cases. I had questions like what's under the helmet, you know, that kind of thing. And what was your inspiration for the design and so forth and so on. And came back Sunday, talked to him as he was taking things out of the case. And he showed me that the figure was bald headed. And I asked him why. And he said, well, I gave him a Ranger High and Tight. And I said, well, that makes sense. It's really cool. And was there another bit behind it? And he said, well, yeah, sure. Hit and Run in its conception in, you know, 86, 87, 88, as it was being brought to the market, was something they felt like any kid could identify with in the line because he's a green army man, you know, green face paint, camouflage. And because of that, we felt like any kid could identify with this particular character.
Great idea.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think it was a brilliant concept. Whether it was intended or not, that certainly is a great way to look at the story.
Mm-hmm.
So John decided that since you were redoing this Green Army Man, we'll make him bald or with high and tight so that every kid or every collector in this case, in my case, can identify with this particular character because he doesn't have defining characteristics like hair color,
yeah,
which might indicate ethnicity or anything else.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, it's a great, great, great idea.
Yeah, the face paint.
Exactly. Exactly.
Skin tone, all that stuff. Yeah.
That was probably one of the single most informative things for me in deciding that that was the way to go with the character choice I made and things like that.
So speaking of your design for Operation Recall, did you do the artwork?
Actually, that was the artist that was doing the stuff for Bill. I submitted a few ideation pieces and, you know, some specifics, mm-hmm. A few pictures of some mock-ups using common parts, things like that, and kind of let them run with it. I like it. You know, I like that it's big and bulky. I like that he's got hairy forearms because I'm a, you know, hairy gorilla of a dude. And like big and chunky and wearing just common military gear, nothing specifically special or anything like that. And again the focus of the piece is Oswald the dog or Ozzy.
So the focus for you was Ozzy. But when I look at the character, and I don't know if this was intentional or not, but when I looked at the character and I was reading a little bit of backstory, not everything that you submitted to Eagle Force and not everything you submitted to Carson, but what Carson put out as sort of a snapshot of Night Raid and Ozzy.
Right, yeah, a little bit of a synopsis of what the character might be.
Right. Everything I read screamed at me a mixture of October Guard and R.E.D., which is Retired Extremely Dangerous.
Right, right. Yeah, the Cully Hammer book.
Mixture of October Guard
right.
and R.E.D. for me made Night Raid an extremely compelling character for me and somebody I wanted to add to my play pattern because I've loved the October Guard since the fucking 20s of the comic book. And then adding R.E.D. on top of it, it's just like...
Did that hit the sweet spot for you?
Yes, 100% hit the sweet spot for me.
It wasn't necessarily intended. Another thing that people seem to latch onto about it was the fact that the character is Ukrainian and not Russian.
Always
Russian military. It was not intentional. That thing was created 2 years ago, well before the current conflict. However, because of the current conflict, it seemed to resonate with people a little bit.
I love the design of him. Like, I love the character.
It's simple. It's generic. It's not too crazy.
The tanker helmet, you know, that look.
Military history too, though, like they're, you know, for us, like the SEALs came from the underwater demolition teams,
yeah, the UDTs, you know? UDT from
so it. Like those guys, they were there, the SEALs kind of came about, and then like they go on their first missions in like Grenada and shit, and you've got some of these old guys that were just shot up from Vietnam and everything.
Who was the bullfrog for a long time? Rudy Vucevic, he was on Survivor.
Yeah, I have a picture. I'll show you. I have a picture with him on my phone. I'll show it to you.
That's cool.
you've got these old guys with all this real combat experience, and then you've got these young guys that don't have that, and then they go out together on their first mission, and, you know, they're in a helicopter, and they start getting, you know, taking fire, and the young guys are like, oh, shit, what do we do? And the old guys are just like, oh.
Well, it's business as usual. It's a Tuesday, whatever.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, there's precedent for, like, the old experienced guys
without a doubt.
Like, go along.
It's a pop culture thing, obviously, and it's not really real. But you look at, like, say, G.I. Jane, by example. Good film. Good film, very entertaining. You see the difference in the age groups of the instructors versus the men in the field. You know, there's a good 10 to 15 year gap, and there's a good reason for that. There's a good reason for that. You know, the guys with more experience, obviously, are the ones training the troops that need to move forward. So, you know, that's not, again, these are all unintended coincidences in terms of the design of the character and stuff like that. But, if it makes it more special to you guys, I'm happy that it does.
I'm very glad it's there because it's something that, you know, a lot of people's picture of the military is very Hollywood. Get our sexy young guys. Like, that's not how it is. You get some older guys that are getting a little heavy, and they're out there. They're still doing it.
Well, I remember about, I guess it was almost a decade ago, one of my longtime customers in the casting stuff, I used to a fella from out in this neck of the woods, actually, right now where we're at in Georgia, sent me reference photos of Marcus Luttrell. He was not a svelte dude. He's kind of big, a little, stocky, you know, and I think that the idea of what an elite soldier should or shouldn't be physically is evolving, is changing, and that's pretty evident there. And I think that's the real world analog for what you have here in terms of this particular character. You know, like I said, he's past his prime physically.
Yeah.
Certainly the spirit is willing, but the body is starting to betray his willpower or what have you. I don't want to make it self-important or anything like that. That's certainly not how I view myself any way, shape, or form, even though I base the character on what I look like. I, like I said, I'm glad that resonates with somebody beyond what the intended consequence was.
One thing we've never gotten, in, especially in, you know, 82 to 94, we never really got different size bucks. So this is a really cool opportunity to give a heavier set guy.
Yeah.
Because just because a guy's a bigger guy doesn't mean he can't be a fucking badass, you know?
I'm no badass.
The character is. Like, you got this fucking Ukrainian fucking guy who just can kick ass, you know? And that's awesome. And the fact that we can get that, I mean, we've gotten bigger guys in
modern, the comic book, you got modern things like that. Yeah, sure.
And when you talk about toys, like the modern era, the 25th or any of that stuff, like Bazooka is a big guy, you know?
Big Show, and then look at somebody that's like half his fucking size that he'll get in a ring with. There's different body types, and not everyone is exactly 6 foot tall and exactly, you know, 180 pounds. Like,
I'm talking really strictly O-ring style G.I. Joe. Like, even the females, they're all the same.
Yeah, they're all the same basic armature and spacing. And
And so the beautiful thing about Operation Recall is, you know, like,
it's
Carson,
an opportunity to rectify that.
Yes. You know, even just with the simpleness of the wrist cuts, you know, like actually being able to hold the rifle and things like that. So the fact that that's going to be like, I'm going to want to set these guys up a lot more than my vintage Joes because they can hold the rifle. They can look really cool in a diorama or on my flag or any of that thing. But the fact that we can get females or now like a bigger set guy that is past his prime, like that's how Carson explained it during the panel. That's freaking cool, man. You know, like, just because a guy's a bigger guy doesn't mean he can't kick ass, you know?
I'm curious at that scale how it's going to translate. So one of the things that I'm not a huge fan of with, like, Classified is the disparity between, like a Lady J's hands and, like, the female-to-male hand difference is huge. Where like, accessories that, since I sort of specialize in that, like, they don't translate between the two very well.
From a design point of view, I think the ability to add a bigger body type will serve them well. And I hope that they've kind of already started thinking about how they can use this tool. Because once you cut a tool, you need to have several uses outlined for it. That's a budget necessity for small upcoming companies, upstart companies, indie companies, whatever you want to call them. And I hope that they've already got some plans for what they might do with this particular tool in terms of reuse and additional parts and things like that. As a company, Chicken Fried Toys has taken a very customizer-friendly approach to the way we build figures, the way we do figures in the modern format. And the reason for that is not largesse. You know, it's necessity. And it goes back to that using the tooling over and over and over again and using it in such a way that the customer doesn't feel like you're forcing them to buy something they've already bought three more times. I hope and I believe that the design team for Operation Recall will certainly be able to utilize that to do other things that are just as cool, you know, different head, different forearms, you know, things like that, different accessories. Colors and paint breaks can do a whole lot to make that parts reuse more palatable to even the finickiest of customers.
Well, and that's the thing, seeing like how Carson did the Midnight Ops on Rotello, that's a pretty cool way. And I feel like, you know, Night Raid would be a cool addition to that. You know, like, I mean, we all as kids loved Night Force. I don't know, like I did.
I didn't learn about Night Force until I was an adult collector.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not because I didn't love G.I. Joe and I didn't have a lot of it. I certainly did.
Yeah.
TRU exclusive. There was no TRU within miles and miles and miles of my house. And if you didn't go to TRU, there was no internet to tell you about it.
Hopefully, you know, you get a Midnight Ops, you know, Night Raid. That'd be pretty freaking cool, right?
Character development goes a long way towards that, too. Just like having a, even if it is just a repaint, having a story behind it kind of makes it palatable to certainly, the customer. Yeah. Whereas just like changing the shade of the outfit and putting it back out there with no explanation of any kind.
Well, that's where you get into that thing I was talking about where the customer starts to feel abused and put on by your attempts to cash in a lazy or less than creative manner.
Yeah.
And you'll see it from time to time, even in large corporations, you'll see it from time to time where they're not taking the time to be more thoughtful in the parts reuse or design. I don't ever want to think that we're that lazy as a company. I won't say it's unavoidable, but at a certain point you will cross that threshold and you will find yourself on the wrong side of that equation.
And that's the biggest thing is you got to tell a story. I know it's just parts, it's just paint, but if it's just thrown together, you know, you got Marvel Legends and stuff where it's just thrown together with some paint sometimes. I mean, they do tell stories too, but like I've always loved the G.I. Joe mythos, you know, like even Tiger Force, like it's a little ridiculous, or Python Patrol.
Don't
you, know?
You start running down European Tiger Force.
Oh, I love European. No. Don't you start with me because I love me. I literally wore all day an Outback Tiger Force t-shirt.
I used to have the same exact shirt.
So good. I love the fact that G.I. Joe went that route, though, because it was a way to get these characters back to kids.
Who missed them the first time
exactly.
around.
Exactly.
Like, in its inception, it was just meant to be plausible Green Army guy.
Yeah, the vehicles were the focus of the line. The figures were a complete afterthought.
As a kid, you know, I was born in 84, so I never had Flint. You shut your mouth.
We've got jock straps older than you, man.
Yeah, well, I've seen them. So Flint, I never had the original Flint. And so my Tiger Force Flint was my Flint, you know, and I love that design, that brown shirt.
The gray accessories are what does it for me because he's the only one in the entire lineup that has that color of accessories. And they're awesome.
I love being a younger Joe collector. Like, I love some of this. Like, I bought some Mega Marines today, you know. That's
and
ridiculous.
Moreover, I'll bet you enjoyed buying them, didn't you?
Oh, hell yeah, I did.
I think we've talked about this before briefly. As an older collector, somebody who got in 82, who's got everything, I find my tastes moving from 82, 83 to 45, which are the wheelhouse of most G.I. Joe guys.
Yeah.
To my favorite years being 87, 88, and 89. The great expansion of the Cobra Troopers.
Years. Yes.
The really incredible extension of the 5-minute in the future type of designs for the Joe guys themselves. People condemn 93 left and right, the death of the line, the neon wave, blah, blah, blah. I'll take all 100 figures of 1993 any damn day because they are ridiculously fun.
Yeah, they're so fun. You know, again, being a younger fan, when 94 hit, you know, Joe ends, I'm sitting there going to like Eckerd and drugstores and being like
True Value Hardware.
Yeah,
you know,
finding what I can find.
Exactly, yeah.
Like, yesterday, I bought a Frostbite carded, you know, from 93, you know, and I loved that figure. He has that like almost Jason mask, you know, and he has all these white accessories, but he's got a little camo pants. He's got orange grenades for some reason. But as a toy, that's that toyetic.
They're lethal.
Yes. You know, like it's fantastic.
Yeah. That's one of the things. My business partner Paul is a great guy, a good friend, and a really great companion on the projects that we're working on. But it was a difficulty we had at the beginning is making him understand that these are toys and they have to have a certain aesthetic to relate that, which might not jive with the sensibilities of somebody who wants to approach it from a 100% realistic standpoint. I told him for about a year when he would say realism, I would say, well, 100% realistic is 100% boring.
Yes.
Obviously, he's come around and I'm not condemning his viewpoint in any way, shape or form. I hope nobody thinks so. But it's approaching things from two different points of view. And I like the toy aspect of this stuff.
Yeah. End of the day, that's what it is. It's a toy. You know, like, sure, I want to have some realism in my toys, but like, you also, it's a toy.
Exactly. You'll see a big difference today in player collector patterns for military fantasy stuff. It skews more realistic military. Afghanistan, you know, PMCs and things like that.
It ebbs and flows.
Yeah, it does. But for me personally, I want the fantasy in my military fantasy. I don't need to see stuff that I'm going to see a news story on tonight of some action in the Middle East that this happened or that action. You know, that action happened. So I want to keep that the fantasy element, really. I mean, I guess that's really all you can call it. That little bit of joy that comes from doing something that's a little different, a little outside the wheelhouse.
And that's the beauty of Operation Recall.
I completely agree.
Great Whites. We have...
Oh, the Great White design is probably my favorite villain design in the line.
Yeah, Raymond really killed it. And I love that he had that as a kid, you know? And I haven't talked to him in person, but just chatting him with on comments on Facebook. I love it. That was my favorite probably design out of the whole run. Just seeing that helmet.
Oh, the shark style helmet. The way it opens in the mouth and that's the viewport for the character on the inside. Yeah. Some of the designs didn't really jive with me that well, but it doesn't matter. They don't have to. They weren't created for me, and some of them do. My own design, like I said, I'm happy that it does resonate with some of the people in the group and some of the people who pledged to the Kickstarter and stuff. And I hope that you can enjoy it because, I intend to. For me, there's the gratification of seeing my buddy Oswald immortalized in plastic. To me, that's very, very much the whole reason for the thing. Now, it's neat to have your face done in a format that you grew up loving and very much being a part of the formative part of your personality. And that's all really great. But for me, it was about Oswald. And for other people in the project, it was more about one thing or another for them. And we each bring our own particular set of circumstances to the design of the characters we chose and picked out for this. I'm excited to see the ideation of the kids' figures, especially because they're so reminiscent of what I can remember doing as a teenager, as a young adult collector and stuff like that, where I was sketching stuff on paper and putting things down and trying to figure out how we do build and this and that and whatever. That was well before any product and manufacturing knowledge came along. You know, I was still buying figures at Kmart by the 11 wave every time they come up. Mom, I need money for layaway. There's 11 new Joes. You know, that was 1986. I remember doing that. You know,
layaway was a beautiful thing.
It was.
My mom got me the Sky Striker for my birthday, and it was layaway.
Oh,
and
nice.
I remember like that. Like I was having a party that day, and she's like, "Hey, you're coming with me." I'm like, "What are we doing?" And we like went to Sears, and she had to like go there and give them like the final $5.
Right, and wait for them to bring it up from the bag.
$20? Wow, that was like the best.
I'm sure that's one of those memories that you're gonna take with you forever.
Yeah, I mean, it lasted like 5 minutes, but like. Yeah. I got to put the stickers on, and then it was like, well, people are coming over to put it away. And then it's like, well, don't let my little brother near it. And already imagine where this is going. Like, yeah, like he broke.
My brother and I were only about 16 months apart. So we were only a year apart in school. There was a lot of conflict and brotherly beatdowns thrown back and forth. I remember, as you're saying, knocked my Revenge of the Jedi or Return of the Jedi X-Wing off the shelf and busted part of it. And we're just trying to drub his ass for that.
Hearing your story about Ozzy and how important that is, I was just curious more on the sense of being a professional in the industry, being on the other side of the fence. If they were to change Ozzy's name or if they were to turn Ozzy into a Chihuahua, how would that affect your experience? And, you know, just it seems like it's pretty important to you.
Well, yeah, that to me is the most important aspect of the figure. You know, I saw the ideation that Ron Rudat did, and there's four or five different iterations of the character, and some of them vary pretty wildly from what I, you know, kind of had in my mind when I put it down. And, you know, and when the art was done and I gave feedback on that. So, they, you know, they vary quite a bit, but, you know, Oswald, he was a Heinz 57 Labrador mix, you know, of no particular specific breed, with all of his little foibles and stuff. That is the most important thing to me. And if they were to decide to make wholesale changes like that, I probably wouldn't be real happy about it. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to gussy it up with pretty language, because that is the reason for why I had it done. As an adult, it was very difficult for me to make the decision to have the vet come to the house and put him to sleep. Now, I was determined to do it at our house because I did not want his last moments to be particularly traumatic.
Understandable. 100%.
You got cheeseburgers and all that for the last couple of days. And
that's beautiful.
Well, it's nothing special. I mean, he's my buddy.
Some people, maybe pet owners, I mean, other people who aren't maybe pet owners don't understand, but you're there for him.
It's not the goo-goo kind of love that you'll see mom carrying on about. You know, that's not that. That was not what we had. You know,
it's an unspoken
love,
man.
My buddy, and he followed me everywhere, and we did stuff together, and, you know, and that was it, you know?
No, I totally understand that. I lost my German Shepherd last year. I fully understand that. And having a bond with an animal like that, it's deeper than, you know, you can't really explain it. So, like, I feel that's a big part of your character.
The circumstance that led to the decision to do it was particularly galling. I knew that he was in decline. There toward the end, it was blind, deaf, and dogs do get dementia just like people. And his mind started to go, his hips started to go bad. And then the kicker for me was while my significant other was out of town for a couple of days, I left for 10 minutes to drive down the street to McDonald's to grab some lunch because there was nothing at the house to eat. I came back from that and parked my truck in the driveway and went up to the door. And I heard the most awful sound coming through the door. It's like a two-year-old child crying. He thought I left him. My significant other had been prompting me for a while. You need to start wrapping your head around. You need to think about it. And, you know, and that was when I decided, well, no matter how much I don't want him to go, this is a problem.
You have to pull yourself out of that equation, you know, and think of what's best for him. I hope everything is translated the same as how you had pitched it. Because, yeah, I mean, it'll be a pretty amazing, you know, feeling to see that carded figure with your pop, you know?
I don't necessarily want anybody else to look at it the way I do. And I hope they just enjoy it for what it is.
And you know?
You don't have to think that it's special because it's my dog and my dog is special to me.
Why is that, you know, not special to everybody else? Because we've all felt that, you know?
I don't expect everybody else to feel the same way about my dog.
Think back to your childhood. Think of Junkyard, Timber.
How about let's go even farther back and think about Old Yeller, where the red fern grows.
Sure.
Right?
Like people. You know, there's this affinity that people have with animals. And just because it was your dog doesn't mean that now as he translates into a character and action figure line, doesn't mean that people won't get a fraction of that affinity and
well, I just hope that the people who do decide to buy the figure buy it because they like it and they think it's fun and cool. The only thing I'm admittedly vain about is my hair, and that's because I have a great coif.
So that's a great hairline.
That's great hair.
It does look very nice. And I hope that Night Raid has very similar good looks. Because
good looks?
Yes.
Are you kidding me?
Hey, evening with gray hair. There's some people wearing hats. or they shave their heads. And
some of us are trying to be hit and run. Some of us aren't, okay?
No. I understand.
I love the concept. I love the character. I love... Operation Recall is a lot of fun.
I completely agree.
I love that Carson thought, let's go to the well, you know, let's go to the fans, let's go to everyone to put a concept out there, you know, let's bring our heroes in and say, hey, can you make our characters?
Can you do this one more time?
Yeah.
Do you have it in you? I mean, do you still have the same creative spark you did then?
And I feel the answer is a astounding yes.
Like I said, I hope that the figure resonates with people. They like it for what it is. I just, you know, I hope you dig it. And I'm looking forward to seeing the development on it and how other creators who had such a big influence on something that's a core part of my life and has been for 35 or 40 years now interpret my version of their work, how it boils down at the very end. You know, as a designer, as a company owner, what they did directly affected where I'm at, and to have them go back and do my work, it's a pretty big honor.
I remember being in the panel, and I was kind of on cloud nine after hearing about my character, because I was just...
Which character is that again?
Los Castigadores. That's my character. But no, seriously, being in that panel, you know, the one John skipped, it just hit us really hard. The cool thing about it was, I was like, calm down, pay attention, because these are some really freaking cool characters. And I remember getting to yours and seeing it and being like, oh, I like that. And then seeing your name at the bottom, I was like, oh, wait, John did that? That's fucking cool as hell. Like, that's fucking awesome. And just being on that edge of my seat already, I don't know, it was a really cool feeling. And I was like, oh, that's a really cool idea. And I don't know, I loved it. And it's a pretty cool experience to see you making these amazing toys. So seeing the character, and like you said, in being inspired by our childhood, loving these characters, enjoying G.I. Joe, and even as kids, we didn't know who made them. We didn't know Ron Rudat or Mark Pennington designed Hit and Run. You know, we didn't know that stuff.
The only people who had anything to do with it that I knew about were, of course, the comic-related guys, Ron Wagner, you know, Herb Trimpe, yes, Larry Hama, yes, you know, Michael Golden, those guys.
Yeah.
And that's the only means I knew to attach to the product. I didn't know that Larry wrote the file cards until I was a much older collector.
Same.
Yeah. And, I mean, I could tell that there was a similarity in the style.
Yeah.
You know, as a kid, as a teenager, you don't think about that.
Mm-mm.
You think, well, this is freaking cool. That's one of the reasons why Hit and Run is one of my favorite characters. I think there's more character in those few lines of peer personality.
He's got
assessment.
A great file card.
He does. It's sad. It's mm-hmm. He spent all of his time running, and they asked him, what are you doing? I'm practicing. You know, this is how that individual, that character, dealt with the death of his parents.
Yes.
There's a lot of subtext in the line in between those three or four lines of peer personality assessment that are on those cards. And Larry is a master of minimism, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, 100%. Yes. And how does it feel knowing now that you have a file card being written by Larry Hama?
Pretty damn cool. I'm not going to lie.
You're literally going to be able to hold this carded figure and read your Larry Hama file card and see.
It would only be cooler to me if the PPA was in Cyrillic. Have Dana be doing it or something. That'd be just crazy.
I freaking love it.
Well, the October Guard connection and all that kind of stuff was not intended. I'm glad that they've read something into it. Added that little bit of spice. That's great.
That's a lot of fun.
Well, yeah. I mean, it takes something that we're familiar with and folds in a little new element, you know, adds a little salt to the mix, so to speak. Not that my character's salty.
You never know. You don't know what Larry's going to write.
I don't know. For me, when I picture that particular character, withdrawing my personality from the character as it's designed, as it appears, as I think of it in my head, I think of him as, you know, a typical Eastern European, kind of defeated, dogged determination, just a lot of, let's get this over with, that kind of thing, you know, the fatalistic, nihilistic view and the determination to see it through to the very end, not in a heroic manner, but just out of sheer obstinance, refusing to stop.
Jason had nothing to do with this show. I don't know where Joel is. And this Order of Battle podcast has been bullshit. But we are here.
This has been an Operation Recall Order of Battle.
This is the last episode of the Order of Battle podcast because Jason left us and... left us in charge, which was a terrible idea. This has been the Disorder of Battle podcast. Thank you for joining us. We like to talk about toys and bullshit. Maybe next time don't let me drink and take the microphone, because I don't know what the fuck I gotta talk about, and I gotta pee really bad. This is the end of the episode. Buy some cowboy toys. Buy some fucking guns from Mark.